Welcome to Super Tatis for Parshas Shoftim. We have our learning today dedicated for the Refuah Shleima of Yosef David ben Rachel Bela, Moshe ben Rachel Mina, and Eliana Malka bas Basya Rachel. We'll start with our stories. The first one is a favorite story of mine with respect to Rav Kook. Rav Kook was a bacher in Volozhin, and he was a little bit different than the classic Volozhin bacher. He was a bearded young man. And there are stories about how, you know, he didn't fully fit in. One of the challenges that they had in the Volozhin Yeshiva is accompanying the extraordinary intellectual level at which all the Talmidim learning it. It came with a lot of intellectual curiosity often, and sometimes it would attract students who weren't who were so intellectually curious they're willing to learn Talmud all day, but they were also getting involved with the maskilim who were not particularly frum. And sometimes this would involve bringing certain books into the walls of the premises, and they didn't belong there. So there became a chashash amongst one of the people at Volozhin that Rav Kook was a maskil. He just didn't fit in. Something was wrong. And not only that, but he started seeing a very suspicious behavior about him, is that every periodically, while he was looking at his Gemara, it looked like he would move his Gemara to the side from his shtender, and he would be looking at something. So what is this? Is this philosophy? Is it, you know, another religion? Like, what is it? You know, what sort of heresy is he, you know, getting involved in? What sort of maskil activity is he getting into? And you know, it became a practice that was so it was so common that it was hard to ignore. So eventually this person in Volozhin went over to Rav Kook's shtender when Rav Kook wasn't there, and he moved the Gemara to see what exactly was this young bacher looking at. And it was a piece of paper with a pasuk that said, Shivisi al Hashem lenegdi tamid, I will always put Hashem in front of me. This is the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, the idea that we're always in front of the Ibbono Shel Olam. Rav Kook was not a maskil. He was a tzaddik, and the one of the benchmarks of a tzaddik is somebody who knows they're always in front of the Ibbono Shel Olam, and that's really the avoda of Elul, is remembering who we're in front of, what we're doing, who we really are. Next story is a funny story based on a Rashi. Here we have the mitzvah tamim tiyeh Hashem lokecha. There's a story about Rav David Mizlotipoli, as the story came to me, and there was a shidduch that was made between two individuals, and the way that the story goes is that the mechutin came and said, Rebbe, my mechutin, you know, what's going to be in the future? How are they going to get a parnasa? You know, this is always the question about these beautiful young couples. You know, they're so young, they're going, you know, going into learning. How's it going to work? Like, how's there going to be a parnasa for their kids? They're getting, Baruch Hashem, they're getting married. And Reb David said, look at Rashi. Rashi, you know, doesn't waste any words. He would not give you an extra letter. And he says, he's ma'arich, he says, on the pasuk tamim tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, there he says, b'loshon HaKodesh, he's halech imo b'tmimus, walk with me in purity, right? Tetzapelo, wait for me, v'lo tachkor ala atidos, and do not investigate into the future. Be present. Think about it. Rashi is telling us that the way we need to have tmimus and bitachon is very similar, in my view, to what's described right at the end of the Shar Bitachon, where he describes the 10 levels of bitachon, and where somebody is just happy being present with the Ribbono Shel Olam wherever they are, whenever it is. So it's this concept, this attitude, there's nowhere else I'd rather be. The third story is not the story about a Rebbe or a Gadol or anything else. In fact, it's about me. When I was, not even before I was a rabbi, but it's a story that came up today, and I was very impressed by it, and I I would wish to share it with you because it really is very instructive. I was a young driver, and I think I was driving with my mother from a furniture store, and I must have still had my learner's permit, but I was at the wheel, and my mother was in the passenger seat, and we were driving away from this furniture store, and in, you know, a giant truck, probably an 18-wheeler, you know, from maybe 25 feet away, starts backing up slowly, slowly, slowly. We couldn't really, by my estimation, go into reverse. And, you know, we saw this happening slowly. We're honking. We're hoping, you know, they're going to stop. It looks like they're not going to stop at some point in time. You know, we decide the best thing to do is just get out of the car and don't get hurt. And, of course, the driver only stopped when he felt a crunch. And, of course, the driver starts coming out and, you know, as understood, we kind of wanted to know, like, what's going on? Don't you want to look at your mirror or something like that? And before really we could say anything, the driver looked at my mother and said, "Lady, be gentle. I just lost my job." And it completely changed the tone of everything. I don't remember what happened afterward, but I remember the lekach that I took, you know, to my adulthood now, is that we always need to be thinking about what somebody else is thinking. There are instances where somebody does something really, really terrible, and they need to own up to the responsibility, and they won't. But there are also instances where somebody has done something terrible, they know they did something bad, they may not want to, like, apologize, or they may not want to do anything else, but trust me, they're punishing themselves. And thinking about the other person really can take you a long way. I'm always touched by thinking about the Ramban when he talks about tochacha. He says tochacha starts with a question. He says you want to understand what they're thinking. He said, why did you do that? And sometimes you'll get an answer you don't expect. And the mitzvah of tochacha is only when it's going to be accepted. So we need to just think about what somebody else is thinking before we start. You know, we live in a very, very quick world. And before we act so quickly, we need to just give that extreme consideration. So now on to the Divrei Torah. Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol sharecha. Famous concept, I saw it in the Shlo, is that what are the sharim here? Al pi drush, you can explain the sharim are your eyes, your ears. We have gates to ourselves, and we need to put watches on them, meaning to say we can't have it just be, you know, a free flow, what goes in our ears, what comes out of our mouth, what, you know, all of these things need to have safeguards, protections, and considerate ones as well. Rashi in Parsha Shlach says that our eyes are the meraglim for the rest of us, and our perception of the world is very important. We learned about an ayin tova and an ayin ra, for example, but, you know, we see this borne out just right in the beginning, in the Midah of Zehirus. The Mesilas Yesharim says that there's two different kinds of misperceptions, which are so extremely difficult. The first one is where we miss something, right? We were just talking about the truck driver story. We weren't thinking about that. We missed something. But there's a second one, which is even more challenging, and that is when we see something, but we misperceive it. And that's something that we need to daven a lot of siyata d'shmaya for. And at times like this, you know, we can take in Elul a lot of time to consider how we should be perceiving things in our lives, and we should all be zocha. Next is a very, you know, simple thing: is the Alter Mikelm says that we have a pasuk says that we could be a navi kamosha, navi kamoni. When you have a Navi like me, and Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, was the greatest Navi, and he said he was also the greatest Anav. He says this connection is not incidental, is that the Anava can get you there to that very special place. Also, we have this mitzvah of Lo Sashchis, Es Eitzah, when you're taking a city, and it teaches us the concept of Bal Tashchis. We shouldn't waste. And the Altar of Kelm also, this is an additional idea. He says that everything has a place, everything has a time, everything has a value. And that's why we don't waste or destroy things for no reason, including even trees. And somebody who doesn't believe that things have a time and a place and a value and all of that, those people as really kind of a hairline fracture that really evidences some heresy. Because if you don't believe in the purposefulness of something, then you're really just not believing in the purposefulness of creation. The Rav Tzadok HaKohen famously, the oft-cited piece in Sinkas HaTzadik that's quoted by Litvaks alike, says, just like we need to believe in the purposefulness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation, so do we need to believe in the purposefulness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creations. And he is medayik this from the idea of Yaminu Ba'Hashem V'Moshe Avdo. At the Yam Suf, they believed in Hashem and in Moshe. What does it mean, believing in Hashem? Oh, they believed in Moshe Rabbeinu's purposefulness, right? And we have this concept, Ein Lecha Dover She'ein Lo Makom Ve'ein Lecha Adam She'ein Lo Sha'a. Everything has its place. Every man has his moment. One thing I would mention, though, which is really remarkable and kind of a kasha you can mention at your tables, is if it's really true we're not supposed to waste things, how could it be that every Shabbos meal we're supposed to leave a little bread on the table, either in case an ani comes or for the purposes of, we don't want to be, gluttons. So we leave a little bit over so we can learn the Musar. So the Altar of Kelm says what we all need to know is that when we take something and we don't use it for its classical use, like a piece of bread to be eaten, but we use it for Musar, that is not a waste. That is an investment. And that's an important lekach also to take with us. A beautiful Rabbeinu Bechaya that you should probably just give some thought to. We learn about the Mishmaros Kahuna, the different groups of Kahuna, and Rabbeinu Bechaya says that actually those parallel the Malachim above, and this is just a beautiful extension of the concept that we see in many places, Malchusa de Arak, Malchusa de Rekia. We have a Beis HaMikdash Shalmata and a Beis HaMikdash Shalmaila, and it would be worthwhile, and the Netziv, famously says that the Mishkan is really supposed to show that we can create, like a Kadosh Baruch creates, it's like a world, and it's based on, and Abarbanel says this, and maybe even be a Midrash that it was showing we'd be creators, but the whole Chap is that we should be seeing extraordinary parallelisms in between the world that we live in and the world that we don't yet see. Last concept, which I think is very, very important, is we have the mitzvah of Lo Sasra Min HaDavar, Asher Yogidu Lecha Yaminu Smol, whence we get this big psak halacha from the Sanhedrin. You can't sway from it one way or another, and the Chazal tell us, even if they tell us that right looks like left or left is right or whatever. And there's a Mechalikus Rishainim here between the Ramban and the Sefer HaChinuch. Does it mean when it says you can't, even if it looks so wrong, dead wrong, like the night and the day, we're still supposed to follow it? What does that Chazal mean? Note that the Yerushalmi doesn't say that. He says it a completely different way. But nevertheless, why would what does that mean? One approach, I believe, proffered by the Rimban is that, no, even if it looks wrong, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will give them Siyata Deshmaya. But the other approach is, no, they can get it wrong. Of course they can get it wrong. Remember Maseches Harios when it talks about all these mistakes that can come out in a Psak Din? What it really means is to say that we have to, when we have these systems that are put in place, and they're put in place, Bikdush Vatara, that means there may be imperfections. There may be, as economists would say, externalities, but we have to accept them in order to sustain the system and accept the system b'shtei yadayim. And when we do that, it will be extraordinarily valuable for us to create just and fair and functioning societies. We're all starting school now. Many of us will experience maybe a speed bump or a hiccup or something like that. And it's important sometimes to remember that we have a longstanding mesora that we are willing to accept sometimes minor imperfections in order to sustain an important, essential system. That could be a school, it could be a shul, it could be another institution, but we need to remember it. Last thing we learn that, this is another thinking question, is that when the Jewish people go out to a Or they say, Mi'aish hayari v'racha leva v'yelech v'yashov l'veso. Says, who is this person of, I guess, weak constitution? They're afraid, soft of heart, as it were, they should go home. And Rashi says, the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that this is talking about a person who's afraid of the averus that they have. And some explain that this avera is just a minor peccadillo, as it were, of speaking in between Yotzer Or and Yishtabach, or Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh, these minor things. So if it's such a, it seems like a minor thing, there's a question, because the Gemara in Kiddushin says that somebody who is Mekadesh, a woman, Al Menashe Ani Tzadik, they say Am Tzadik, even if they're a Rasha Gomor, they are Mekudeshes, because maybe they did tshuva. If that's true, why is that same logic not applied here? Why don't we just assume that these soldiers are going to do tshuva, if they have some sort of minor peccadillo on hand? Thank you for learning with me.